Blog Talk Radio.
With your host Tim Burton and Kel Fritzy. You'll notice that that is not our usual opening song, and there's a reason for that, because we are standing with our Israeli allies. And that song is called Im Nin Elu, and translated from Hebrew, it means If the Doors Are Shut. This is a song performed by Ofra Haza, a very, very highly regarded performer in Israel. I like this song a lot because I love the lyrics. I'm just going to translate a few of them for you. Even if the doors of the righteous will shut, the doors of heaven will still be open. The living God will exalt those by cherubs. All will rise by his spirit, living God. And then just one more passage that you hear at the end of the song. Even if the doors of the righteous will shut, the doors of heaven will still be open, living God. See, this is Israel. They love life. But we are going to expand on that. You have noticed the premise of the program tonight, but I would love to say hello to my co-host. And hello, Tim. How are you?
Good evening, Kel. I'm very well indeed. And how the devil are you this evening?
I am as usual. infidelity fine.
Well, that's great news, and as usual, I'm unbelievably well as well. And I love that song. I love that song, Kel. I think that's a lovely piece of music for the opening. And you know, in view of what we're going to be talking about, I think it's very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. We are going to have a guest on at the bottom of the hour, and that's Michelle Walsh, and she is in Canada, and she will be talking about a very, very important event taking place in Calgary this Thursday with Ezra Levant and others, in which they will hold a counter rally of peace in light of the attacks that took place there a week and a half ago, when Hamas supporters were attacking not only Jewish ralliers, peaceful protesters, but they were also attacking hapless passersby. So Michelle Walsh will be joining us a little later. And then after the top of the hour, after our break, Michael Green will be coming on to briefly share some news that he has learned that is coming out of Israel. So it's going to be quite the busy show. I hope everybody does enjoy it. But, yeah, what's been going on in Israel? You have been writing extensively about this on the Brenner Brief. And the thing that your last article that I read, and ladies and gentlemen, and this is for the archive listeners as well, if you go to the show notes, there is a direct link to Tim's work at the Brenner Brief. You can find all of his articles there. But the latest one I read is one that was published today, and by the way, it's trending again. Good
all
for
right.
you, Tim. Very proud of you.
Thank you.
But the Israel-Gaza conflict, the 12-hour humanitarian ceasefire, I was very intrigued in reading this article, and I also learned a new word today. Hudna, which translates to ceasefire, which the Gazan Arabs are not adhering to.
Well, no. Hudna, for those of our listeners who aren't particularly familiar with the term, broadly means a ceasefire or a truce, but it has very specific overtones, and we would normally translate a ceasefire as something that, would happen, and it wouldn't necessarily have any other meaning other than cessation of hostilities. But for Muslims, it means something quite different. It's only ever a temporary thing. The Muslims are allowed to extend a temporary truce to the infidel if they are in a position of weakness, and only for as long as it takes Muslims to regroup, regain the upper hand, and then they can break that truce. And you know, we might think that's a dishonorable thing to do, but in Islam it's perfectly okay, as are so many things that we consider to be dishonorable and against the spirit of humanity. It's perfectly okay with Islam. So with a hudna, if Muslims are fighting infidels and they're obviously losing, they can extend the offer of a truce to the infidel. It has a maximum period, and that is 10 years. But a hudna can be less time if Muslims choose it to be less. I mean, they might say, yep, let's have a 10-year truce or a hudna, and the infidel thinks he's got peace for 10 years. But in fact, what happens is if Muslims regroup, rearm, get into a stronger position, and then feel that they can attack again and get the upper hand, you know, even if that's only a month later or 2 months later, as far as Muslims are concerned, that's absolutely fine. They can just go ahead and attack and break the terms of what infidels might see as an inviolable truce, and they don't think twice about it. This is just another reason why you cannot trust Muslims with anything of importance, because their idea of what constitutes something that's morally and ethically acceptable is completely at odds at what the rest of us in the world, and particularly those of us who subscribe to the Judeo-Christian notion of morals and ethics, it's completely at odds to what we would think of as acceptable. So yes, the Hodnah has a specific meaning in that respect.
I don't understand why the UN is so adamant that there be a ceasefire. They've never interfered in other conflicts to this magnitude, and I also don't understand the interest of the United States. I know that John Kerry was pretty much sent home with his tail between his legs. Israel's got to be left alone. Like, let Israel settle this once and for all.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, John Kerry epitomizes a man who is just totally out of his depth. He was described by Israeli ministers as being negligent, not having an understanding of even the basics of what's going on. I think even Haaretz, which is, I may not pronounce that correctly, but it's a relatively left-wing newspaper in Israel. They referred to him as being a space alien. He says their view was it was just like a space alien landing in his spacecraft from Mars or somewhere, not having a clue about what's going on in the region, jumping out and hopping around, trying to say, you know, things should be done this way or that way. And I thought, when I was reading about John Kerry, I thought, well, two other good adjectives would be clueless and compromised, because it's quite obvious that being part of the Obama administration, he has to do what, or he has to try and implement what Obama tells him to do. So he's obviously going to be no friend of Israel in that respect. And the ridiculous thing, when you're trying to establish peace between two warring parties, the thing that most people would probably think of is, well, let's get the two warring parties together and see if we can't talk things through. All right, I'm not saying that that would necessarily be the way forward at this point, because personally, I don't think Israel should be having a ceasefire at all, but that's a separate argument, which I'm quite happy to elaborate on later if you wish. But John Kerry decided he was going to go off and talk to the Qataris and the Turks about organizing a ceasefire, and he came back with a lot of conditions, which would basically give everything to Hamas and do nothing to alleviate the problems of the rocket fire from Gaza by Hamas, or the tunnels, or, you know, that wasn't going to be addressed at all. The ceasefire proposal that he had in mind, John Kerry, wouldn't have addressed those things at all, and would have just handed Hamas a load of preconditions which they asked for, like, you know, opening the borders, building a seaport, you know, allowing free trade of, you know, tunnel building materials and fresh armaments. Mm. I mean, just totally ridiculous. I mean, the guy is completely clueless. I mean, my cat could do a better job of Secretary of State than John Kerry. You know, and all he'd ask for in return would be a bowl of cat treats every now and again. That guy is just totally out of his depth, and he just should not be there. So that's my nuanced view on the Secretary of State for the United States. So there you go.
I absolutely agree. I have a real issue with UN interference and United States under this current administration. Their interference, and that we did play that clip on a program last week.
Yeah,
I wish I could remember which one.
Sorry, Kel, I just remembered something else as you were speaking, and it was just something that Vorpalbyte reminded me of in the chat room, to say that the UN is a Muslim-infested organisation. Well, yes, of course it is, and I had forgotten to mention that point. The Organisation of Islamic Cooperation tends to hijack these talks if it's anything to involve Israel, and they all come down on the same side against Israel in any discussion which might involve Israel, no matter how small. And the United Nations, because of that, the United Nations is no longer fit for purpose. The United Nations was originally set up back in the 1948 in order to resolve issues between countries so that we wouldn't have to have major wars. You know, this was all in the wake of the Second World War. And, you know, I dare say, like a lot of things, it seemed like a good idea at the time. But it has become compromised. If you have the OIC, who basically dominate the Arab presence at the United Nations, you're going to have a totally skewed system, which is going to work against Israel every time. And I personally think that the United Nations, because of that, is just no longer fit for purpose, and we ought to find or create another group. We ought to disband the United Nations and find a way of creating another group which doesn't have this inbuilt bias of Arab countries all siding against Israel. But if you want to know why the UN gets involved to this extent and makes all these pronouncements and calls for things that are obviously against Israel's best interests, like a ceasefire, for example, which is nobody likes to see children and innocent civilians suffer in war. Okay, that's a given. But for Israel to accept a ceasefire at this point, I think would be totally counterproductive to long-term peace in the region. Hamas has no interest in stopping its aggression towards Israel. It has no interest in stopping firing of rockets. It has no interest in getting rid of the tunnels. And the goal of Israel is to stop all these things happening and to bring about a situation where Hamas no longer poses a threat. Now, we're nowhere near that point. So to call for a ceasefire at this time can only be against Israel's interests. And that's why I really hope that Israel can resist the international pressure to call a ceasefire at this point and get on with the job and just totally crush Hamas until it is no longer capable of posing a threat to Israel. Now, I know that's a big ask because international pressure can take all sorts of forms, and Israel might have to make a decision about at what point do they cease pursuing their own interests and listen to or follow the dictates of international pressure. There may come a point where they feel they've got no alternative, but right at this moment I think it would be against Israel's short-term and long-term interests. But it doesn't surprise me that the UN are pushing hard because of this bias within the UN, which is generated by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. But, yeah, sorry, I interrupted you while you were in the middle of a sentence, Kel, so I'll let you pick up from that.
Oh, absolutely no problem, because I think it's important that people know that backstory, part of the backstory of the UN and the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Conference, it was called, and they changed it to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. And, of course, we know that New York City, the UN headquarters, is totally infested with Arabs and Arab states at this point. And this is why I think that it's time to leave the UN. And Canada in particular, because we're a sovereign, we could join the Commonwealth and we could walk away from the UN. I don't know what the blowback would be for that in terms of the liberals that we have to deal with here in Canada. But I don't know if the United States would be welcome.
Well, the problem with the United States, of course, is it's got somebody at the top who is doing tremendous damage to the United States with domestic and foreign policies. And so to invite such a person into any newly formed organization where the goal would be to try and establish long-term world peace, I think would I think it would be a mistake at the moment. Now, that's a hell of a sweeping statement, I know, because America is a great world power. But right at the moment, it's being run by a rogue president who doesn't doesn't subscribe to a view of world peace where everybody can live together as equals in perpetuity. The whole problem with Islam and Islamic states is that because of Islam, there is no sense of long-term living together as equals in perpetuity. Muslims will only accept other people in a state of dimitude, or the alternative is for them to Islam, or the other alternative is for Muslims to make war on them, and that those are the only three alternatives. Now, that is not compatible with living together long term as equals in perpetuity, and therefore, if you're going to aspire to a world that is going to live in peace together, you are going to have to take a view on any country that subscribes to Islamic principles. You're going to have to say, if this country subscribes to Islamic principles and cannot live with us as equals in perpetuity, we're going to have to take a decision on how to treat them, because we cannot treat them in the same way that we would treat others, because they will just take advantage, as they are doing now, as we see everywhere around the world. We try and treat everybody the same, because the Judeo-Christian approach is to treat everybody the same, as if every single person had equal worth, and I think that's a wonderful aspiration. But when you've got people that you treat that way, that only ever really works if they're going to treat you in the same way back, and if they're not, then you have to carry a big stick of some sort in order to deal with them when they try and kill you, because that is what Muslims will do sooner or later. And if you know that's what they're going to do sooner or later, it doesn't make sense to bring them into a group in order to try and work out a process for getting to world peace, because Muslims will just never do it. And, you know, it's a harsh thing to say, and there'll be a lot of people out there who'll be going, racist, racist, Islamophobe, Islamophobe. But it's the truth. You know, there is no way around it. Islam is what it is, and that's it. There is never going to be any negotiation. There's never going to be any compromise. There's never going to be any tolerance from Islam towards the rest of us. Their goal is to claim the entire earth for Allah, and they'll do it by whatever means are possible. Fear, violence, intimidation, and terror have worked very well for Islam for the past 1,400 years. Why would they change? Why would they suddenly stop doing that and say, perhaps it's a good idea, we'll all live in peace as equals? Well, no, they won't. They will never do that, and so the rest of the world has got to find a way of defending itself against these people until such time as Islam is no longer a threat. At the moment, it's a huge threat to the whole of humanity, and our politicians are vainly struggling, a bit like trying to put a finger in a dike, and if you'll excuse the expression, it's a Dutch saying, and it's nothing to do with sexual orientation at all. It's a Dutch saying, holding back the water by putting a finger in a wall full of holes where the water's coming through. I thought I'd better just explain that before I cause any more trouble. Our politicians are trying to say that this isn't true. This isn't the right view of Islam. Islam is a religion of peace. It's benign and tolerant and peaceful. It's perfectly compatible with Western civilization and parliamentary democracy. And it isn't true. It's a lie. And that lie has been propagated to the extent that, you know, there are quite a few people out there who actually believe it. Because if you repeat, as Stalin once said, if you repeat a lie and make it big enough and repeat it often enough, people will come to believe it. And the lie about Islam is just that, it's a big lie. So we're going to have to find a way forward and accept that Islam will be a huge problem for us to deal with, but we need to deal with it. We need to stop pretending that it's something that we can all live in peace with, because we can't. We'd like to, but Islam simply will not allow it. But anyway, I think probably that's enough on that particular aspect. So I'll let you move on to the next point, Kel.
Well, what I'm going to do is that we are going to be phoning Michelle Walsh in 5 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a rally going on at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. in Calgary this Thursday, July 31st, 2014. So please, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listeners in the Calgary area, please try to get to this rally this Thursday. The speakers will be, as I aforementioned, Ezra Levant. And Ezra is a lawyer, author, newspaper columnist, and host of Sun News Network's daily TV show, The Source. The other speaker will be Tariq Fatah, and he is an author and columnist for the Toronto Sun and is the author of The Jew Is Not My Enemy. And the other speaker will be Ryan Bellerose. Ryan Bellerose is a native from northern Alberta. He is a founding member of the Calgary United with Israel organization. So if you can be there on Thursday afternoon, or my apologies, late afternoon into the early evening, please try to attend. I have the link. I'm going to put it in the chat room, but I'm going to let Ezra Levant tell you about the rally, and here we go.
Calgary streets should not be under the rule of Hamas or its supporters. Violence should not go unpunished in Canada, especially political violence. The police and city council should not be silent in the face of a crime spree. This is Canada, not Gaza. So what should we do? Well, we already hired a lawyer for the victims. You helped pay for that through your donations. Thank you. We have shone a light of scrutiny on what happened. That's important. We've delivered a petition of more than 4,000 names of outraged Canadians who signed up at stoptheriots.ca. We delivered that petition to the mayor's office, city council, and the chief of police, demanding that they press charges and denounce these crimes. But still, nothing has happened. It's been almost a week. So I say we do something physical. Something real. I say we get off the couch and go right to the steps of Calgary City Hall ourselves and prove that this is Canada, not Gaza, and that Calgarians of every and any stripe can feel free and safe to walk the streets of Calgary without pro-Hamas thugs beating us up. That we can wave any damn flag we like, and we love the Canadian flag, and you know what? We like the flag of our Israeli allies too. And that we can do this, and we bloody well expect the police to protect us, not to run and hide. So I am convening a rally myself, right where the pro-Hamas thugs were last week. That is not their turf. That is not a Jew-free zone. That is not a Sharia law zone. I don't live in Gaza. I live in Canada. And I have free speech and freedom of religion. And my police force had damn well better arrest any thugs who try to stop me. I am inviting all of my friends to join me in Calgary. We are going to have a big rally called CalgaryForIsrael.ca. And that's the website with all the details on it, too. CalgaryForIsrael.ca, next Thursday, July 31st, from 6 till 8 p.m., right on the steps of Calgary City Hall, we will take back that ground that those thugs think they could steal from us. This is not a Jewish rally, though Jews are welcome. This is a Canadian rally. It's for everyone in Calgary who supports democracy and freedom and despises Hamas and other terrorists. It's for people on the side of peace, not terrorism. It's for people who are sick of the thugs, who pretend to be just anti-Zionists or whatever they call themselves, but who are really nothing more than this century's Nazis. But it's more than that. This isn't really about Israel or Gaza at all. It's about what kind of city we want Calgary to be, what kind of country we want Canada to be. We want it to be a place where Gaza-style violence is not acceptable, not by the police, not by the mayor. We want to be a place where Jews and Gentiles and Muslims can all walk down the street without fear of being punched to the ground. Far more terrifying to me than some street thugs is a political culture at City Hall and the Police Commission that accepts street thugs. I'm going to MC this rally next Thursday. We're going to have some great music and a few good speeches. One speech from a Jew, one speech from a Christian, and one speech from a Muslim. One of my favorite guys, Tarek Fatah, will be there. He loves Palestinians, and he weeps for their sorry state. But he knows that loving Palestinians is not the same as hating Jews. He knows that helping Palestinians does not mean launching terrorist attacks against Israel. And my friend Ryan Belrose, a Métis man from Calgary, a Zionist who's been on our show, he'll also be speaking as well. This is going to be a pro-Canada rally for every Calgarian who loves peace and freedom, every Jew, Christian, Muslim, and anyone else in Calgary who stands with Israel's right to self-defense and who knows that Hamas and its Nazi culture of violence are unacceptable to civilized men. I'll see you next Thursday, 6 p.m., July 31st, at City Hall in Calgary. To learn more, please visit calgaryforisrael.ca. If the police won't take back our streets from these thugs, we will.
And that was Ezra Levant. And I put the link in the chat room for everybody. If you scroll down, it is right there. And if you scroll down even further, you'll see the full segment, which is 14 minutes long. And with that, what we are going to do right now is that we are going to phone Michelle Walsh. Now, this is going to be fun because I've never phoned a guest live on the air. So let's see what happens. Okay, so I'm going to... here we are. That would help. And you'll hear the phone ringing, and goodness me, ladies and gentlemen, I really hope I don't get an answering service where it says you have reached 555-1212, because that happened to me before, and I had to immediately take the show to Audacity and get rid of that person's personal phone number. So let's hope that we have Michelle with us. She's anticipating our call, and it's dialing, and there it is. So let's see what happens. And
hello.
Hi, Michelle.
Yes, who's calling?
It's Kelly from the Red
Fox. Oh, hi, Kelly. Oh, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you? I've never done a live call on the air, and I was terrified that I was going to get an answering service that would say, oh, you've reached 555-1212 or something ridiculous like that. But it is an honor and a pleasure to speak with you again, once again. Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking with Michelle Walsh of Canada. And I just played that. You know what? What I should do is allow you to say hello to my fellow host, and that's Tim Burton.
Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Yeah,
I'm doing not too bad.
Pretty good, pretty good. I've been following following your entries on Facebook, and nothing bad. It's good to see things from a Canadian perspective. I mean, obviously we've got Kel, who keeps me up to date with most things happening in Canada, but it's good to get other Canadians as well, and it's good to speak to you again. So keep up the good work, and I'll hand you back to Kel.
Okay, thank you, and it's good to speak to you again. Hi, Kel.
Just before I brought you in, I posted the link for the Calgary for Israel rally, and I played the four-minute clip of Ezra Levant explaining what's going on. You had a wonderful full entry on your Facebook website, and I was very, very pleased to read it, and I reshared it. You are instrumental in promoting a lot of issues in Canada, but of course, I mean, you have had personal dealings with the Mohammedans, with your daughters, and this is the case, and this case is very, very, very famous within our counter-jihad movement circles, in that when your daughters were taking their Taekwondo courses. Well, actually, Tim, how do you say that? They weren't taking Taekwondo. They were taking Aikido?
Aikido. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I followed the story. We spoke about it, obviously, Michelle,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I wrote about it and published an article mm-hmm. on Brenner Brief, and I really hope that people will read that and take note so that similar things don't happen to other people in the future, because it really was an appalling story. I mean, if we get time, we can go into it a little bit more, but it's important that things like this are resisted. And I mean, I haven't sorry, I haven't spoken to you, I don't think, since we posted that particular article, but I mean, are there any new developments on that, or has anybody come back to you and said anything about similar experiences they might have had, perhaps?
I did get some, my daughters did get some emails that it has happened in other dojos across Canada, and the dojo, the sensei, had told them, well, this is a co-ed martial arts class, so you could either participate with the females or not to attend. You're more than welcome to join another place. But at this martial arts class, you can't do it. So we had a few emails from senseis saying that they were appalled that our sensei allowed it and was quite shocked by it. It's just, and another martial arts, which is a type of Aikido here in Halifax, sent a similar email saying the same thing, and he offered my daughter, Sonia, a free month to attend his class. So only hit across Canada, it also hit locally here, where they were appalled by the accommodations being met for Islamic religious, you know, discrimination.
Well, that's really good news. I'm so pleased to hear that, you know, your story got that sort of publicity and that those sort of things happened as a result, because it has to be resisted. You know, if people like you and I and Kel and all the other counter-jihadists, if we don't stand up and say something about it at this point, Muslims will keep going. They will not stop unless they are stopped. And so stories like this are just, it's so important that we get them into the public sphere, because they have a human face on them, stories like this. You know, I mean, it's one thing talking about what Muslims might be doing in a faraway land, but when it hits home, you know, right there where you are in Canada, and you can put a human face on it with, you know, yourself and your daughter, people identify with it that much more readily, and things like that can help to spread the word far faster than you might think. So I'm really pleased to hear that, Michelle, really pleased. Back to you, Kel.
This rally coming up on Thursday, are you getting a lot of response from people in terms of them being in attendance? Because what happened in Calgary, Michelle, a week and a half ago was shameful. This is not Palestine. This is not this is Canada. And I was reading reports and I was watching the videos and I was seeing things that shocked me. This did not even look like Canada at one point. And we had a similar incident in Toronto, and I'll get to that one in a moment. But in Calgary, what happened is that there was a counter-rally. It was peaceful. But these Gazan Arabs were attacking passers-by. They weren't even targeting targeting the counter-rallyists, but they were going after everybody. It was mayhem. And reading what you posted on your Facebook page, and I wholeheartedly agree, is that the Calgary police should be ashamed that their prison cells were not filled to the hilt. I believe that they may have brought in six people for questioning. Whether charges have been laid, I do not know. But it always seems to be that whenever there is a conflict and it involves the Mohammedans, they always seem to get the free pass. Whether this is going to be the case in Calgary, I find this absolutely shocking. So I had to speak with you and ask you, please come on the show and explain exactly what's going to happen on Thursday with this rally with Ezra Levant. And Let me see. I got the link right here, of course. I want to do this properly. Ezra Levant, Tarek Fattah, and Ryan Bellerose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to be joining on Thursday evening and giving speeches and showing their support and asking the mayor and the police why is the mayor, Mayor Nenshi, not saying anything publicly for the outcry of the assaults. I call it more like an attack. I mean, they literally attacked his family. This was just a couple of...
Yeah.
You know, father, daughters, and some cousins, you know, Christians and Jewish people, just a handful across the street, you know, they weren't in the same space as them. I don't even think they were even that close. They were, like, across the street and further down. And when the Palestinians and the Palestinian supporters, pro-Gaza, saw them, they just ran across the street, grabbed their flags out of their hand like savages. I was completely shocked that this was happening in Canada. And as Ezra said, this is not Gaza. This is not Palestine. We don't tolerate abuse like this. You have the right to free speech, but you don't have the right to attack somebody. And for Mayor Nenshi to not even come out and say anything for days, and the Calgary police not even investigating, that Ezra just had to stand up, and he said he just has to do something. He has to force the politicians to wake up and see that this is going on all across Canada where they're attacking supporters of Israel. And I told you, or on my Facebook, you've seen pictures where I was at a rally for pro-Israel just last week, and it was very civilized. But we were inside of a building, and we had to be protected by the police, was circling the neighborhood and the streets around. There were security guards inside because the Minister of Defense was speaking on behalf of Canada for the Conservative Harper, showing his support for Israel and their right to defend themselves. And there was also a Liberal leader there who was the MP for that area. He was showing his support. And a Baptist minister who was there, who's, you know, Christian, not Jewish at all, and he was showing his great love for the Jewish people. And he was literally shocked himself by some of the, made a mention to some of the supporters that have been attacked, that this is one of the reasons why they had to do it inside of a building, of fear of being attacked.
I find
it was
shocking.
Very scary.
It's shocking what I'm seeing developing in Canada, especially since the Israeli, I like what Tim Burton calls them, the Gazan Arabs conflict. And because I do not believe that in a Palestinian state, I do not. It's manufactured. It's fake. But it's spilling over into so many other countries in Europe. But what I'm witnessing in Canada is very concerning to me, as it is in the United States. And of course, we had the rally in Toronto a couple of weeks back, in which the Palestinian House, which has since been defunded by the federal government, they still find funding to keep that place of evil going. And they had a rally when they were protesting the death of a Gazan Arab in retaliation by Israelis, of course, we know that. But this was in retaliation for those three Israeli students that were kidnapped and murdered by the Gazan Arabs. And so the Palestinian House held their rally, and Israel came out. The Canadian Israeli Foundation came out, and they were across the street. They were peacefully protesting this, and these Gazans were literally using their flags, the poles in which the flags were hanging, they were using them against the Jewish Defense League members and the Canadian Jewish Foundation members, and they were literally pummeling them, and it was horrifying to me. And something else that I found horrifying, Michelle, is that they were also waving Canadian flags. And how do we rectify something like this in Canada? And what is going on in Europe. Like, when you saw that, your thoughts, because you're in Eastern Canada, it must be very frustrating for you sometimes to see this and say that, I wish I was there.
Oh, I absolutely say I wish I was there. I'm completely shocked by it. I just wish there was a train that would take me. We're not as condensed as the UK or France, that where you can get a train and hop on it and be there in a couple hours. It would take me, you know, a day and a half or a couple hours by flight. But I was also like to a in the universities is where I'm finding, if you saw my post, where I'm finding this is where all of the Israeli anti-Semitic hatred is coming from. It's almost like they're getting a visa into a country. They're coming to the universities, and all they're doing is spending majority of their time canvassing and trying to convert people to be anti-Semitic or to be Islamic. And my daughter, we've seen posters at her university saying that there was going to be a I guess you call him a Zionist, so he was for a Zionist, but he was an ex-terrorist, an ex-extremist from London, England. And he came to speak at this university about a year and a half ago, and he was pretty well threatened from Palestinians in the audience, telling them that he would be killed for turning his back on Islam. And they were saying death to the Jewish people and death to Israel. I was completely shocked that this was going on at a local university here in Halifax. And then when they attacked, one guy said, older man was leaving the premises, and he said, "Oh, I just can't believe it. You're savages." One of the young students jumped up and punched him in the back of the head as he was leaving the building. I witnessed this. I took pictures of this. I'm calling 911. And lo and behold, there was a police officer, plainclothes police officer, who jumps up and opens his shirt, and you can see the police crest on it. And he tries to break up the fight. And I'm there. This is the young man who attacked the older man, and no charges was laid. I was there, but I got pictures, and he's there. Well, I didn't really see anything, so I can't really say. So I'm saying, you're pretty well saying you're going to let this guy go. Like, I'm completely in shock. And then as all that was going on, and that all the paddy wagon came, you know, with that's what we call it, the paddy wagon, with all other police there surveilling the area, because fights were breaking out between young university Palestinian students at a university lecture hall, and I was shocked that nobody was taken away. And these were, most of the people in the audience were older men. And the gentleman who was giving the lecture, an ex-Arab Islamist, he had to get rushed out of the building because he was terrified that he was going to be attacked by these Palestinian students. But afterwards, we contacted the Jewish Council, and I said, if you need my pictures or anything, and they said, this is nothing new. This happens every time they give a lecture at a university here in Halifax. It's nothing new. And I also contacted the local media if they were interested in my pictures to find out what was, to let them know what's going on here in Halifax, that these events are taking place and Jewish people are being attacked, and they were not interested, which is another thing I was shocked at. But also, they were pamphlets, handing out pamphlets to talk about another rally that they were going to do downtown Halifax. So they were handing out these posters talking about another rally. So we went to the other rally probably about a couple weeks later, and I was shocked, as you see on my Facebook, pictures of the Canadian flag, black, upside down, dripping in blood, and they had, like, the Jewish flag, but instead of inside of it the star, they had the blue Nazi symbol, and saying that Jewish people, Israel is equal to Nazism. And then they had posters, death to Israel and down with Israel, and Israel equals war crimes. And they were chanting out things to Peter McKay, saying Peter McKay, which was her minister of defense at the time, was a war. I was completely shocked. I'm videotaping all of this. Once again, there's a man who's across the street, like it was in Calgary, like it was in Ontario, across the street saying, if you don't like Canada, why don't you go back? Well, a bunch of Palestinian students started chasing that man down the street. And I videotaped some of it. I was completely in shock. I couldn't believe this is going on. And once again, the media was not interested in my video or pictures.
No,
that
they
have on video.
Entertain you. That's right.
I had video even of them calling us white supremacists and death to Israel, like verbally they're saying this, and the press is not interested. So the press is keeping it from us, and this is what happens, and then you get grow more and more anger because nothing's been done to stop all of this anti-Semitic hatred towards the Jewish people. So I'm just in shock about all of it.
I find this absolutely appalling that when I see the footage, when I watch clips from Sun Media and Facebook page, people who post videos, and I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, this has got to be in France or somewhere. This can't be in Canada. And, well, it is. Islam has roosted itself in Canada. I don't know what Prime Minister Stephen Harper is going to do about this. I know that he's trying valiantly to curtail these Islamic activities. The Ramadan is ending tomorrow, and I don't know what's going to happen when they have their Al-Quds rally on Saturday. They always have the Al-Quds rally the first Saturday after the end of Ramadan. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a rather interesting day at Queen's Park in Ontario, and Queen's Park, of course, being our provincial offices. This is going to be interesting to see what goes on. But I'm going to pass the mic to Tim because I have Tim wrote a very good article in the Brenner Brief, and Tim, you were discussing what was going on in France and what happened with the Jewish population there in France. Could you give a brief summary about that, and you and Michelle can have an exchange about that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, what you were describing to me about what was happening in Canada, as you were talking, Michelle, I was just thinking what Kel was just mentioning there, that in France they had some rallies just recently. There were two rallies. I think one was on the 13th of July and the other one was on the 19th, and they were extremely violent. This was in Paris in particular, but I understand similar rallies occurred across France, and they frightened the French authorities to such an extent that after the first one, they said, well, we're going to ban these pro-Palestinian rallies, and anybody who shows their face at the rally will be fined €15,000 and given a year in prison. And they obviously had thought, well, that'll show them. That'll show them we're serious. But of course, as far as Muslims are concerned, it's no deterrent at all, because if a Muslim, typically you've got a very high level of unemployment amongst Muslims. So if they get a fine, well, they just don't pay it. So there's no deterrent there. And if a Muslim has to spend time in prison, well, that boosts his credentials. It's not a deterrent for a Muslim to have to spend time in prison, because like most prisons across the Western world, or certainly in Europe, most prisons are actually run by the Islamic inmates. The guards, all right, they're there ostensibly to keep order, but the prisons are actually run by Muslims for the benefit of Muslims. So there's no real deterrent at all for Muslims to be put in prison or fined. And that's if the authorities actually follow through on their promises to arrest people who turn up at the rallies. And of course, what happened was at the very next opportunity, a rally was called 6 days later. Thousands of Muslims were out on the streets again. Obviously, they couldn't care less about anything the French state might have to say about keeping them off the street. And they went up and down the various main streets in Paris, smashing the windows of Jewish stores, looting Jewish stores, besieging synagogues. And the authorities were powerless to do anything about it, absolutely powerless. And what we see in front, the only difference between what was happening in France And what was happening in Canada that you were so eloquently describing is the fact there are more Muslims in France. That's the only difference. They all have the same mindset. They're all singing off the same hymn sheet, to coin a phrase. And the only difference is the fact there's more of them in France. And when there are more of them in these other countries, such as Canada and other countries in Europe, we will see exactly the same, if not worse. Mm-hmm. And so all our governments ought to take note of what's happening in France, and certainly what you described in Canada. I mean, shocking, I agree with you, totally shocking. But when you take account of the fact that all Muslims, devout Muslims, have the same mindset, and that is to, it's not just the anti-Semitic Jew hatred, which is bad enough, it's the underlying assumption that sooner or later, when they're powerful enough, they will overthrow the existing governments in these various countries and they will take over, and they will do it if they can. They will not stop of their own accord. We are going to have to stop them. And by we, I would hope that our political elites would eventually wake up and smell the coffee. I fear they won't. I think things are going to get much worse before they get better. But what we saw in France last week, and I did write about it, as Kel said, in the Brenner brief, but there's lots and lots of websites that have got a perspective on what was happening in France, and none of it is good. It's the very first time, it's since 1945, that such open anti-Semitic Jew hatred was seen on the streets of France, and it's been simmering away underneath the surface for years and years and years. And I think the French authorities thought, well, you know, as long as we just quell any dissension or any suggestion that Islam is somehow violent or that it's not the benign and tolerant religion of peace that we, you know, we've been telling everybody it is for years and years, everything will be fine. But it only needs a spark. The events of the past few weeks have shown it only needs a spark such as the Israel-Gaza conflict to bring all that to the surface and for all hell to break loose. Now, if it can happen in France, and the only difference is that, as I say, is the population of Muslims is greater in France than it is in other European and Western countries, it will certainly come to the streets of Canada. And I think it's a warning, it's a wake-up call for all European and Western governments to heed. Whether they will heed it or not, I don't know. But we have to do our bit to make sure that, you know, if it does happen, it won't be because we haven't warned them. We have to do everything we can to say this is not acceptable. You are in power to look after our interests, and you need to be doing something about it right now. And we have to come out and not be afraid to say that. You know, we've got a civilization which our forefathers and ancestors shed their blood for to give us the freedoms that we have. And the politicians we've got now seem to be intent on giving away those freedoms to a bunch of 7th century savages. And nobody is standing up, until now, and actually saying, we can't let you do this. This is not going to stand. We are not going to allow this. So rallies such as the one that's being held in Canada are absolutely essential. I was so impressed when I saw the website and heard Ezra's speech, and I thought, we need somebody like that in every European country to have a similar rally and to stand up and say the same things, because we're fighting against the same thing everywhere. It's not different in Canada compared to the UK or France or Germany or any European country. It's the same fight against the same people with the same mindset. And so we have to have a unified approach. And I think what you're doing in Canada is absolutely commendable. I only wish I was in Canada right now to be part of that. I really do. But I would say anybody who's listening and who has the opportunity to support the Canadian rally, please, please turn up, because it could be one of the most important things that you do when it comes to protecting our civilization and our values and ethics and morals and traditions and our way of life, our way of doing things, something that we could be proud to hand on to our children and grandchildren. You know, it's under threat. We need to stand up and say it's not going to, we're not going to let it happen quietly. We're not just going to lie down and roll over. You know, we're going to do something mm-hmm. about it. So I really, really am behind you in spirit with this, Michelle. As I say, I only wish I could be in Canada right now. I really do. And I'm sure Kel will back me up on that.
Oh, we wish we could have you here, Jen.
Sure do.
And Kel, wouldn't you love to be there, Kel, on Thursday night, the two of us there?
Oh, man, you and I would make quite a team together. We need very strong people to fight the scourge. And believe me, Michelle, you're listening to Michelle Walsh, and she is a counter-jihadist, tireless in her work. And she is getting the word out about the Calgary rally going on Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, my time. That would be 5 p.m. your time there, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage, please, I have also been promoting this on my own Facebook page. Calgarians, please get out there and support this endeavor, because we cannot put up with this in Canada. It's bad enough. As Tim explained specifically what is going on in France, we cannot afford this to happen in Canada, anywhere else. Jewish peoples are under attack in France. It's an awful, awful situation. My goodness, I never thought I'd see the day that in a Western democracy, Jewish peoples would be holed up in their own synagogues under siege. This is totally unacceptable, and we will not allow it in Canada. It stops here. It stops here right now. But hey, Michelle, I was wondering, could we keep you for just a little bit longer?
Sure. Oh, yes, sure. Yeah.
We have another person that is joining us, and this is Michael Green, and I think that you will be very interested in what he has to share with us. And Michael Green, welcome to the program. You're speaking with me, Kel Fritzy, of course, Tim Burton, mm-hmm. of course, and our guest is Michelle Walsh. But Michael Green is also another tireless counter-jihadist. And he has some news he wants to share with us. But first of all, Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I want to thank you for inviting me on the program. Big hello to Tim. And
hi, Michael.
Hi, Michelle. Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Michael. I'm good. Glad you could join us.
Wonderful.
Hello,
and Michelle.
Mike.
I think
hello,
we spoke
Michael.
On the air once before. I believe you and I have spoken before, Michelle, on one of Kel's previous programs.
Yes, we have.
Okay. Yes, been
like
living.
To say thank you very much for being a tireless infidel, an infidel fighter.
Right.
Well, you know, we don't have much of a choice today. A famous American general said, just to paraphrase, it was General George S. Patton. He said, "It's better to fight for something than live for nothing." So we must fight the good fight, as that cliche goes. And we must remain steadfast in our resolve and never waver, as the great Sir Winston Churchill said, and just continue on and always strive to accomplish something worthwhile in this great endeavor. You know, that we have to persevere.
Oh, I totally agree. We can just never give up. As you've seen in the last couple of weeks with the Gaza terrorists, I call them, extremists on our streets, we have no choice but to fight to keep our freedom of speech and our freedoms in our own countries. So I do this tirelessly. I never give up. I just wish our governments would take a look and see what we're going through, because I've sent emails, countless emails. I still have my petition that's online. I have well over 1,000 signatures, and I'm just going to constantly be emailing that to Prime Minister Harper and all the ministers to please help Canada. We can't allow discrimination towards women, and we can't allow anti-Semitic discrimination towards a whole race of people and a whole country. Everybody should have the right to think what they want to think and do what they want to think, and you shouldn't have the right to discriminate. So I just will never give up on that.
Well, in this time where Israel is under a brutal attack again from Hamas throughout Europe and the West, wherever Muslims are, we see the same rhetoric, the same anti-Semitism and intense hatred of Jews manifesting, and it's getting uglier. As I was listening to everyone speak this afternoon about it, and it will get worse. It's very dangerous for people of Jewish origin to live in Western European countries.
Oh, I totally
Michael.
Agree. It's very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. And believe me, Michael Green, ladies and gentlemen, is such another tireless worker like Tim and myself and Michelle Walsh. And Michael Green, you have some news that you want to share.
Well, there's been some new developments in Israel and especially in Gaza, where the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, have been battling the Hamas terrorists. And for people who have been following it, just a synopsis of this, there's been a lot of back and forth issues with Secretary of State Kerry from the U.S., attempting to broker a truce or some type of ceasefire, and he's been a colossal failure because he is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God the government of Benjamin Netanyahu has been steadfast in rejecting these so-called truces because they favor Hamas, and that's unacceptable. So, of course, Israel has conducted many airstrikes and used its ground forces to take down the tunnels and basically take out the infrastructure, which is very extensive. Hamas has had 5 years since 2009. That was the last time the IDF was in Gaza. So now today I have some contacts in Israel, and there's been some breaking stories. First off, there was a Hamas terrorist cell that infiltrated Israel through the southern border where Gaza is, and fortunately the IDF neutralized them before they could carry out any, mission, and that is, of course, to go there, not just kill Israeli soldiers, but to kill Israeli civilians. So that's a good development. On a bad note, there was a rocket mortar attack on the border with Gaza and Ashkelon, and at least three Israelis were killed, and scores others were wounded, some seriously wounded, and that also unfolded today. Also in the past 24 hours, five other Israeli Defense Forces have been killed. Total brings it to 48. They have 48 casualties since the ground invasion, which is not even 2 weeks old, if I'm correct. And they have 10 additional soldiers wounded. Typically, these wounds can be very serious and, you know, life-threatening. And we need to pray, those of us of faith, that, you know, for a lot of healing for those who come back off the battlefield and, you know, they make it back alive. It's a long road back to recover. So those are some breaking developments today. And out of all this...
Fantastic.
Out of this, what we do have is we have a very clear message now from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister, Moshe Yaalon, and one other official from the Israeli government. And they held a press conference in Israel tonight, and they made it very clear that they're going to expand the operation. They're going to continue with their mission in Gaza. They're not going to entertain any other ceasefires at this time. And hello?
Hello, yeah.
Yeah, got you.
Okay, sorry. And that they're not, that basically, you know, this is our nation. We're being rocketed. Thousands of rockets have been fired into our country for many, many years. And they seem very determined to move forward. And as far as world opinion, they're not concerned, which they cannot be. And the UN, by the way, the UN also came up with more nonsense of some stupid resolution. I don't know how official it is, but the UN had determined that there must be an immediate ceasefire, you know, the typical rhetoric from the UN, which, by the way, the
mm-hmm.
UN is controlled by the OIC. That's the Organization of Islamic Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the OIC has a very prominent influence in the UN. UN has always hated Israel, so there's nothing good coming from there. I hope to see the IDF take out Hamas entirely. I hope that they obliterate them and degrade them to a condition where they are no longer a threat. And I think Israel now understands they have no other choice but to move forward and continue their military operation.
And hopefully it will be an end to Hamas. Well, I have to say, I'm sorry, Cal.
No, you go ahead, Michelle.
I'm very happy that Harper has came out with full support for Israel. And when I was at the Israel rally last week, the conservative defense minister, Rob Nicholson, was there, and he pledged that he feels 100% that Israel has the right to protect itself. It has the right to defend itself, and Canada gives it 100%. So I was very happy to hear that coming from Canada and the Conservative Party. And Ezra, as you know, he is works for Sun News, and I'm so happy with Ezra. He is countlessly fighting Islam, who come after him constantly. We're taking him to court over words that he might have said on his show or of anything he ever blogged. So he's constantly being attacked by Islamists. And you have to give it up to Ezra Laurent of the Sun News, because without him, a lot of these stories and my story would have never gotten to the rest of Canada or to the rest of the world. So
Michelle, I just have to interject and say I so totally agree. Ezra Levant is a Canadian national treasure.
He is. I mean, he countlessly, constantly working this, taking up everybody's fight, because he knows the other radio and news stations and TV, will CBC and CTV, will just not report the real news of what's really going on with Islamic discrimination and terror across Canada, across Europe, across the world. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think anybody would hear much of what's going on. I know for sure I would have never known about what went on in Calgary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Yeah, I have signed up for Ezra Levant's newsletter, and so I get updates in my email all the time. But I have Ezra Levant is a very, very busy man, and he's hard to pin down. But he did sign my book. I got to meet him.
Lucky you.
Oh, I know. We were at a... you know Shabna Kapoor, right?
Yes. Yes, I do.
She's
on my Facebook.
Yep, she's a lovely, lovely lady. And she arranged, this is going back close to 2 years ago, and that she arranged a town hall conference to keep that Omar Khadr out of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I attended that in Toronto, and I got mm-hmm. to meet Ezra Levant, and I brought my books, and I said, would you sign my books? You know, I was such an insipid fan, and he was so gracious. He's so nice. And every once in a while, I'll send him an email, and he does respond, but he's a very busy person. He
mm-hmm.
is so busy trying to protect the interests of Canada, and what mm-hmm. he's going to do on Thursday is commendable. Ladies and gentlemen, the link for the rally is right in the show notes, and that includes you, archive listeners. It's right there. It's calgaryforisrael.ca. Please click on that and listen to what Ezra Levant has to say to you. But, yeah, Michelle, I really do wish that you and I could hop on that plane, that train, that bus, whatever, and get ourselves there, because we would be formidable side by side.
Mm-hmm. We would never let up. We would fight. Well, you have to, because they never let up. They never, never let up. I they're just a group of people who I'm shocked by, and the amount of distaste that they have for women, and just the audacity to want to cover us up. I'm just shocked by it. I'm completely been in shock, I think, in the last 2 years about what's been going on around the world and how our politics and politicians are just not doing anything real about this. They have to start standing up and saying that if you're an immigrant and you immigrated to this country and you have these hateful things that go against Canadian law or European law or American law, that you need to leave then. Why are you here? Why do we need to keep you here even though we know you hate us? Why don't you just put them on the plane and send them back to the country that they so love?
Mm-hmm. That is exactly it. I do not understand. I was listening to Mark Levine. He's out of the United States. I listen to him quite often. And he was discussing, and he's not the only one. I've heard various people discuss this, including Tim Burton, my espoused co-host. And we allow them to enter our countries, and we think that we're doing them a favor in which that we're offering them brand new opportunities, and we think that we can culturalate them into our democracies, but it's not working. It's a failed experiment, and in Canada in particular, with multiculturalism, no thanks to dear Elliot Trudeau and Brian Mulroney, it has been a very, very much a failed experiment. I am hoping that Stephen Harper still has a year before the 2015 elections, the federal elections. I don't know if he has any designs on scrapping the official Multiculturalism Act as it was written up in the Charter in 1982. Michelle, if we got rid of that, do you think that Canada would have a ghost of a chance of recovering from this takeover, as I see it, by these Islamists that swim over here and will not assimilate?
Oh, yeah, I think it was a colossal failure to have us designated as an immigration status and give all kinds of immigrants status. I think we were in the fantasy that they're coming here because they want to be free and they value Canadian values and they value our charters and they value equal rights for women and they want to get a career, they want to get a job, but from what I've seen over the last 2 years, the last couple of years, that doesn't seem to be the thing. They're not coming here. They don't want our democracy. They want Sharia law. And we can't allow that. We can't allow a gender female mutation. We can't allow women to be segregated in schools. We can't allow ourselves to be covered up with headdress from head to toe. And to segregate, that's going back in time. We just can't allow that. And I just think it's a colossal, horrible thing. And I agree as well.
And they come over here not because they want to embrace a democracy or freedom from Sharia. They come over here, it's twofold. They come over here because Canada in particular, the United States, of course, and Britain, we have very, very, very generous welfare programs. We have social safety nets. And they lead point, and they bring over the first wife, and they bring over the aunt and the cousin and the sister, and we know that's the second, third, and fourth wife. And they breed. And they're affecting the host countries with their breeding. I believe it was. It'll come to me in a moment. But here it is. Muammar Gaddafi said that we will not conquer Europe and North America by the sword. We will do it via population, and we're seeing this happening all over the place. But they are building the voting blocks. And they are building these communities. Canada's Islamic population is sitting at around 3.5%. In France, it's much higher. I think, Tim, you can help me out with this. I believe it's closer to 15%, and thus we're seeing
the problem. Yeah, it is. It's somewhere between 15 and 20%. And, of course, when it gets to that sort of level, the problems that you see are going to be much, much worse. And it will be the same in any Western country. It's not peculiar to France. It just so happens that France has a higher percentage. But the demographics are such, as you so rightly say, with the amount of children that each Muslim woman has, typically 3 to 4 on average, where the indigenous population in Western countries is below replacement. Now, this might not seem a big deal, but what it means is that if you start off with, I don't know, 100 Muslim couples and 100 non-Muslim couples, in one generation, you're going to end up with, 75 non-Muslim couples, but you'll end up with 400 Muslim couples.
Mm-hmm.
And in two generations, it will be exponentially greater. You'll end up with maybe 1,600 Muslim couples and 1,600 Muslim couples, 50 non-Muslim couples, and that's in two generations. That's how much difference it can make in a comparatively short space of time, 40 or 50 years. And if that is allowed to happen, it will mean the extinction of our Judeo-Christian civilization in Western countries as we know it now. And this is something that our forefathers and ancestors fought for, to give us freedoms in a civilizational structure which is arguably the best framework for the future development of humanity. But it's a fragile framework, and it needs protecting. And right at the moment, our politicians are not protecting it. And what will happen is it will be overwhelmed and crushed if we allow it to be. It's that serious. And we have to do something about it now. And the way to do something about it is to make our politicians aware that what they are doing is completely unacceptable, allowing these people free rein in our country when they have, at the back of their mind, they have its total destruction in civilizational terms. They have its total destruction in mind, and replacing it with the Islamic Sharia. And that is going to be bad for everybody. And we just simply cannot allow it to happen. But anyway, I don't want to develop that to too great an extent, so I'll hand the microphone back to you. But demographics is a hugely important thing.
Oh, absolutely, Tim. I absolutely agree. And Michelle, what do you think about that? Like I mentioned, we're sitting at about 3.5% in Canada. Do you think, ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you, you are listening to Michelle Walsh of Canada, and we are talking about the rally that Ezra Levant has organized for Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, my time, 5 p.m. Michelle's time. She is on the East Coast. What Tim relates there, Michelle, like we have a very low percentage, but we're seeing the noises. We're seeing the belligerence, especially with the Gazan Arabs. I won't call them Palestinians anymore. They're the Gazan Arabs. We have to let Israel know that we stand with them 100% and let Israel take care of the job once and for all. But how do we battle the belligerence in Canada? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, a lot of my supporters and a lot of emails and with the petition, people leave a comment. So I have well over 1,000 comments. And every one of the comments is that they're shocked that in their Western country that women and their politicians in the past have fought so hard to make sure that everybody's equal in their countries. And they're shocked that Canada is allowing religious discrimination towards women. And the more people's eyes are opened that even at 3.5% we're being discriminated, you hear in the news here, there, and everywhere, what is it going to be like when there's 20%? Mm-hmm. They're going to demand discrimination. They're going to demand segregation in the schools. And we're going to go back into the 1920s where you had boys on one side and females on the other. And that will be luckily if the females will be allowed to go to school. Or will they have to learn home ec again? Or, you know, and the boys or do all the men education. So at 3.5%, we're getting discrimination here and there in the Musketeer. People's eyes are opening up because he saw a man joined a co-ed keto class. He knew it was co-ed. He went
mm-hmm.
in there knowing.
Yeah.
And then he demanded segregation. And Air Canadian Human Rights Commission, which I call them the so-called Human Rights Commission, demanded that we accommodate him, that he be allowed in our Western democracy to discriminate against women. I'm in shock over it. And all the emails that all my supporters have sent to the Prime Minister Harper and my petition that was presented in the House of Commons didn't really do a hell of a beans because they're still allowing it. And I know Ezra is fighting to take down these so-called Human Rights Commission because it's based on this charter of immigration. And it's ruining our country. This is just one aspect of it. What about when they demand another thing because of their religion, and then they demand that they don't have to, that you were talking before, they're allowed to park on the side of the street and they don't want to be ticketed, so they get special permission because of their religious accommodation. So they're constantly giving these Islamic, I call them, they're terrorizing me, they're terrorizing the community.
Yeah.
By they're constantly giving these terrorists special privileges in Canada that you and I, and we all know, we wouldn't get. If I parked on a street, I get a ticket. But if these group of people park on the street and they demand that they not be given tickets, they get away with it. They could attack people on our streets in Calgary, they get away with it. They could go to demand masks on Friday afternoons and segregate girls in school, and they get away with it. When is the community, or when are people in the communities going to stand up for their community? And I'm afraid it's going to be too late when they decide to do it. So when they completely have infiltrated into our politicians, they're getting voted in, they're secretly changing laws, which we don't know about, and then we're going to stand up, then I'm afraid it's going to be too late. You're going to have to undo an awful mess.
I think that we are heading down a slippery slope, and that if we remain complacent, we are not going to get up that slope again. We are going to fall onto the sharp rocks, and we'll never recover. And Michelle, what you say exactly about the Human Rights Commissions, I call them the Human Rights Tribunals. There was a case, I'm not sure which city, so I will just leave that general, but it was a case in Canada where, as you alluded to, that they were trying to get to their mega mosque for their Friday prayers, but the parking lot was filled, so they were parking on the side streets, and they were getting ticketed, and this group took this to the Human Rights Tribunal, because they said this was Islamophobia. Like for mm-hmm. the love of jeez, like this is what they do. They come over. They don't even believe in man-made law, but they take advantage of our Magna Carta. They're very crafty at this, and they win millions. And what they did with Ezra Levant, not once. Not twice, but three times mm-hmm. now. We have to get rid of the human rights tribunals in Canada.
Mm-hmm. It's a joke.
It's what I say is mass Islamity. We got to stop the insanity. Canada cannot afford to go down the road that other countries are going down. The United States, they are seeing this. And Vito Esposito, he said in the chat room, I don't know if you can see the chat room, but it's quite busy in there. And Vito said that Muslims flock to sit on human rights councils in American cities, Jacksonville, Tampa, and Orlando, Florida, to name a few. Yeah, we're having Muslims being invited to sit on human rights tribunals in Canada as well. This is terrible. We have to find a way to eliminate the human rights tribunals. They were initially set up, as everybody knows, because in the 1960s, et cetera, 1950s, 1960s, there were people of color being denied housing because of their color. They were being denied jobs because of their color. So the Human Rights Commission was set up to combat discrimination. But now they have turned into human rights tribunals in which if you hurt the feelings of a real Muslim, a Mohammedan, they'll take you to it. And they have a 99% success rate of mm-hmm. winning their cases at no expense to them, but at the expense to the accused, as it were. Ezra Levant, they shut down his magazine, The Western Standard. They broke, financially broke him. I have donated a couple of $100 over the last 5 years to Ezra Levant's Defense Fund because I so strongly believe that we have to do something. But we have to get rid of these tribunals, Michelle.
We have to. Well, I told you what the tribunal did to me. I sent emails and called the Premier of Nova Scotia, the Liberal Premier of Nova Scotia, asked him what he was going to do about the Human Rights Commission allowing discrimination towards women on government facilities. Well, he never would return my call. A lot of people, I asked my supporters who signed the petition if they would please email the Premier of Nova Scotia. So I guess he got so many emails that he decided to send out through the Human Rights Tribunal a statement about my and my daughters, what happened to us. But they never notified us. They wouldn't speak to us directly, but they spoke to other people. And they mm-hmm. told the other people, very selective, and said, well, the evidence that they gathered didn't meet or I can't find the word right now, but it didn't measure up to what I was saying and my daughters were saying. Well, they never asked us for any evidence. If they had asked us for any evidence, they would have seen between the emails between myself and the sensei that the discrimination did take place, that the combinations were made, and that Muhammad did hand out literature that was very discriminating and hateful towards the Jewish people, towards women, towards children at wedlock. It was very, but they never asked me. They refused to take my information, my complaints. They refused to investigate, but they tell people that they did investigate. But to me, they told me they weren't going to investigate. So I found that very disgusting and very distasteful. And the Premier of Nova Scotia signed it. He was given he gave them the go-ahead to make that statement and send out to people. But they refused to speak to me. So that was pretty disgusting, and I'm pretty disgusted about that. So that Human Rights Commission, I just can't believe that they did that. And they assaulted Sun News because they claimed that the Sun News didn't get the right evidence. So the Sun
and
News
had to go after them
for that.
You know, it leaves you wanting to literally bang your head on a wall because you had a legitimate claim there. What happened
mm-hmm.
to your daughters in their Aikido classes was unforgivable. And I'm going to have Tim ask you a question in a moment because I know he's probably got about a dozen. But one in particular I would like to ask you is, do you think that we're up against an entity that is antagonizing and that they do this on purpose? They know that they get special dispensation. I think that Mohammedan, he purposefully signed up for that course so that he could push the envelope and get a segregation in your daughter's course. What do you think about that?
He definitely did, because he did show up afterwards. He got his commendation. Mm. He handed her the booklet, and it was a disgusting booklet, that pretty well telling her that if she didn't wear Islamic dress, then she's asking to get raped. It mm-hmm. was very disgusting, and then we never seen him again. But we were only there probably a couple of weeks after that, because we were held by a noose saying, well, if you don't show up, then your daughter's not going to be graded for the work that she did for the last year and a half. So he had kept promising us for months, oh, just stay in, I'm going to grade her, and then he wouldn't show up, or he'd say, I didn't have another partner with her. Well, the partner that he wanted with her was another female. Well, we signed up for a self-defense class in Aikido to work with all genders. So he kept waiting and waiting until this other girl showed up. So finally she showed up. But anyway, my point is that I think he joined the class specifically to get accommodations and to cause a trouble and to try to convert people by handing booklets. Muhammad refused to speak to my daughter, to participate with her for 2 months until the day he wanted to hand her a booklet, as he's waiting for her outside the bathroom, waiting for the females to leave so he could hand them this pamphlet inside the government, inside the facility. But I'm more shocked about the Premier of Nova Scotia and the Human Rights Commission allowing it and demanding it, and then sneakily behind there trying to say that this young girl who's 15 and her sister, that this was like we exaggerated, or it wasn't really the facts. It's not what they investigated. Well, if they had investigated with me, I can't emphasize that anymore. They would have saw the emails between us and the sensei. They wouldn't even speak about the booklet. That's how bad the Human Rights Commission was. That's what I was after with the Human Rights Commission. How is this booklet being allowed to be handed out to children? How is this booklet being allowed to be handed out on government facilities? Why is the provincial government and my taxpayers' money going towards this type of discrimination? They refuse to speak to me on this matter, but they send out an email to strangers about us, saying that it basically didn't happen. It didn't happen. So I would love to sue them, which I did go to see a lawyer, but the lawyer said it would cost me thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That I did have a case, that we did have a case for discrimination and wrongful, you know, I guess, character assassination.
This is unbelievable to me. And we have a very, very busy chat room and a very busy studio. And ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Michelle Walsh. She is a counter-jihadist from Canada. But we want to thank people who are listening on the line, and that is Moving and Sue from New Mexico, who is tireless in getting all the shows out. Bigfoot, we have some guests in here, Golf Dogs, Paul Alexander, Vito Esposito of the Radio Jihad Network, who is also mine and Tim's boss, and Vorpalbite. We've had people come in and people come out, and we want to thank everybody that will listen in archive. But the prayer room issues is what Paul Alexander brings up. They make all of these demands, but you know what? That is a subject for another time, because, Michelle, I really want you to come back again, but I know that Tim is chomping at the bit with a question for you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you've been talking, Michelle, nothing shocks me, I've seen it all, but when you hear about somebody of the status of the Premier of Nova Scotia, who's mm-hmm. actually putting his imprimatur, his mark on what's going on, and he's basically saying, yes, I'm all right with that. Well, then that is something that has to be got out into the public domain, and we just have to complain and complain and complain about it until people realize that there's something going on which is, you know, really against everything to do with, I say, our morals and values and ethics, Canadian morals, values and ethics, and a sense of fair play and a sense of giving, you know, everybody an equal opportunity to do things and expect to be treated equally without fear or favour by those that we elect in power over us. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, a government of some sort is needed in order to control the democratic structures that we have. We would prefer that it was only a small government and that it stepped in as little as possible. But given that a government of some kind is needed, we should expect to be able to hold them accountable for when they take egregious decisions like this. And I think for the Premier of Nova Scotia do what he did and to say what he did is absolutely appalling, and it should be widely known. We really need to get out there. We need to develop mechanisms to get our dissatisfaction into the public arena and just make it clear that these things are just not acceptable at all. I mean, as far as prayer rooms are concerned, I mean, I think Paul Alexander in the chat room, it was probably slightly tongue-in-cheek, you know. I mean, prayer rooms are being asked for all over the place. But, of course, one of the reasons that Muslims get away with things like this is they have pushed and pushed and pushed for us to accept Islam as some kind of peaceful and tolerant and benevolent religion when it's nothing of the sort. Now, I think there's a very good case to be made for pushing for a reclassification of Islam as a political ideology and not a religion, because the reason it gets away with so much is because people think, oh, it's a religion, we have to give it the same religious status and religious accommodation as we would to Jews and Christians and real religions. And the reason I say real religions is the definitional, one of the main definitions of religion is that it follows the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Treat others as you would be treated, that kind of thing. That's all the part of the golden rule. And it's what makes the difference between a religion and another entity such as a cult or a political ideology. Now, Islam does not follow the golden rule, and it should not. On that alone, that reason alone, it should be treated as a religion. And I think if you also looked at the Islamic texts, 64% of the Quran, the main book most referred to when they're talking about Islam, 64% of that is not devoted to making Muslims better people, providing a path for spiritual enlightenment, showing them how to be benevolent towards their fellow human beings. Certainly there are commandments in the Quran which say that you should treat other Muslims well, but when it comes to non-Muslims, it's bad news all the way. The Quran says you must treat non-Muslims ruthlessly, and 64% of the Quran is devoted to treating how Muslims should treat non-Muslims, which makes it a political manual, not a religious manual, primarily. And I think there's a very good case to be made, although our political elites are not going to accept such a reclassification without a lot of arm twisting, because obviously Muslims are not lying down. But it is a fact that the reason we have the problems that we do with Islam is because we have been sold a pup. We have been sold a fiction, a lie, a fallacy that Islam is some kind of a religion of peace when it's nothing of the sort. And I think we should be able to deal with things as they are and not as our political elites would like them to be. I'm sure they would love it if we all accepted that Islam was a benign and tolerant religion of the peace, but the fact remains that it is just not so. It just isn't true. The story that they're pushing us regarding the official line towards Islam is a lie, and we should call that out, and we should have Islam reclassified as a political entity, as a political ideology. If we were able to do that, we could treat it in exactly the same way as Nazism, because it shares many of the characteristics of Nazism in terms of its totalitarian nature, in terms of its fascist nature, in terms of its goal for world domination. And Nazism has been, shall we say, frowned upon for a number of years. Since that little business of the Second World War back in 1939, which cost 55 million lives. Well, Islam has already claimed 270 million lives plus in the last 1400 years, Muslims slaughtering non-Muslims in the name of Islam, and it shows every sign pattern of carrying on and slaughtering many more millions if it's not stopped. And it won't stop of its own accord. It will only stop if it is stopped by the rest of us. And reclassification of Islam to what it really is, which is a political ideology with an agenda of world domination, would be so much better than try to pretend that it's a benign and tolerant religion of peace. And we'll still be chanting that mantra even when the Muslims have got their scimitars at our necks, and that's the problem. Muslims will not allow us to live in peace with the rest of them as equals in perpetuity, and we have to wake up to that reality and do something about it. But that's something we can maybe develop on in a future program. Michelle, it's been so good to talk to you tonight. I'm really glad you could come on our program and join Kel and myself and our listeners and give us the benefit of your experiences, and I do hope you're going to come back soon.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Oh, Michelle, you always have a standing invitation to join us at the Red Fox Blogger as well. You are welcome to join us at the Radio Jihad Network on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. where Tim and myself co-host together as the freedom-loving infidels. But, Michael, do you have any parting words for Michelle?
Yeah, I was listening attentively to your discussion. I don't know how realistic it is to think that Islam could be declassified as a religion, because it would take an act of legislation. Western nations are, by and large, their governments very leftist liberal. And those individuals are in control, and that's just a fact. So unless that was to change first, where there was a larger percentage, well, you'd really need a close to majority rule of conservative thinking people, I mean true conservatives, to, you know, have a breakthrough. I know Tim was referencing that. You know, I agree. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly that Islam, in its true sense, if we examine it correctly, is not really a religion. To have that be a realistic avenue, you know, it's really, that's a big uphill battle, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Michael, I wouldn't see this happening overnight, but I think it's something we ought to maybe keep in mind as a medium to long-term goal, because the fantasy that it is some kind of a religion of peace is what's at the bottom of our current set of troubles. We cannot effectively deal with it unless we look at it in terms of reality rather than fantasy. But I'm sorry, Michael, I was interrupting your train of thought there.
No, I agree with you. The thing is that...
I have a question for you guys. Don't you think that Cal, Tim, and Mark, that our politicians and our legislators know all about Islam and they're just afraid to do something? Because I can't believe for a moment that our prime ministers and our presidents and all the politicians around this world and the United Nations or human rights commissions and that does not know the real meaning of what Islam is and what the Quran states. I think they're very well aware of what's in there, and they don't want to do anything about it for some particular reason, which we probably know. Is stopping them, but this is what I believe.
I'm not sure if
Michelle. Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. I'm just going to interject for a quick sec. Michelle, we started up a brand new show. It's called Islam Exposed, and this is what we address with Tim Burton and Agador on Thursday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. This is a brand new show, and this is our primary objective, to keep the politicians' feet to the fire. It's a wonderful point.
The other thing I'd like to say, if I may, interject here for a moment, Michelle and Kel and Michael, is that I'm sure our politicians are aware that Islam is not what the public face of Islam is made out to be. That is to say, when Muslims say that it's a benign and tolerant religion of peace, I'm sure there are many of our politicians who say, well, maybe that's not absolutely true. But I'm sure there's the fear factor, because no politician is going to want riots breaking out on the street on his watch because he says, well, maybe Islam is a religion of peace, because we know what happens when people in authority or people in the public space make such statements. I mean, the Pope only had to jest that perhaps Islam, this is not this Pope, the previous Pope, Benedict, he said, well, perhaps Islam isn't quite the religion of peace that Muslims say it is, and there were riots all around the world. So I'm sure politicians look at that and say, well, you know, what I'd really like to do is retire with my gold-plated pension and not upset the apple cart while I'm in office. Now, that's a completely immoral position, but nevertheless, it's the position that a lot of our politicians are taking. They're also... The fact that I'm sure some of our politicians don't realise the extent to which Islam is not a religion of peace, and they think, well, you know, maybe we'll just keep quiet and not say anything. And we've got also the Saudi petrodollar to take into account, where if Muslims wanted to, they could create havoc with our economies just because of their financial clout. So there's a combination of things here. Certainly fear is a factor. The willingness to appease Muslims, because after all, Muslims have a vote. Regrettable as that might be, in my opinion, it is the case in most democracies. Muslims do have a vote, but there is hope on the horizon. I mean, you see countries like Angola, for example, that they've reportedly banned Islam and Muslims in that country. Now, I don't know to what extent they've had a backlash since that announcement was made, because it was quite some time ago, and I would have expected to hear a little bit more about it in the media. But nevertheless, the fact that one country has done that, no matter what a small, faraway country it might be, you know, that does give you pause for thought. And countries like China and Russia also have a better grasp of what Islam means to their countries and the future development of their own civilizations, and they're taking a far harder line than we are here in the West at the moment. And I think we could learn a lot, especially from China, where they do not mess around. If Muslims cause problems, they are treated relatively harshly. Of course, they complain about it, as Muslims do everywhere. But we I think, could learn a lot from some other countries. But I know where the time's ticking away, so I'm going to hand the mic back to you guys. And Kel, if you'd like to bring one of the others in to add a few last thoughts, I'll pass the mic over to you.
I just want to say that it is once again an honor to speak with you, Michelle. I'll come back to the show as a semi-regular, maybe once a month, and keep us apprised as to what's going on, what you're doing for Canada. I could not even keep up with you. You are a wonderful inspiration in the counter-jihadist movement. And promoting the rally in Calgary is wonderful. I also want to thank you profusely, and that I only asked you yesterday, could you please come on this show? And you're so gracious in which you did. So, but I would love to speak with you on the phone privately, and maybe we can just speak cats and dogs once in a while.
Well, you know, the honor is all mine. It's a great pleasure to be on your show. And I am not close to being anything like the counter-jihadist that you are, Cal, and Tim, and Mike from Australia, and Mike from Green from the United States. I can only wish to be as a great counter-jihadist as you guys. And any time you would like me to come back on the show, I'll be more than happy to. And keep up all the good work that you do, because without you guys, there would be no information being spread around the world as to what Islam and the terrorists are doing in our Western nations now. It's just
exactly.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. And Michael Green, thank you for the reportage of out of Israel. That is very much appreciated. You also will be back on the airwaves, whether it be with RFB Radio WOW or Freedom Loving Infidels at the Radio Jihad Network. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I do want to say one parting thought quickly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main things I think that is being neglected is that, number one, the Islamists are organized, they're well-funded, and they are able to influence political leaders with, you know, their narrative. And so unless people on the opposite side of this get more organized and are able to attempt to influence the political landscape, then doesn't sound too optimistic, but realistically, that's not going to change, because a lot of the people on the left, and I've debated many people with that mentality, they really don't see Islam as a threat. They recognize that there is allegedly a small percentage that are violently inclined Muslims. They can't deny that, but as a whole, they don't see it at this time. And, you know, until they do see it, things aren't going to change significantly in terms of the political landscape in Western nations.
I got you. And, Michael,
totally
thank you for that. Yeah, totally. Folks, we are out of time. Tim and myself want to thank you for joining us, and especially listening to Michelle Walsh and Michael Green. We will be back, Tim and myself will be back tomorrow night at 6 p.m. on the Radio Jihad Network, heard here on Block Talk Radio, and we are the Freedom Loving Infidels. And Tim, we also will be back on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time with Agador, where we dissect the failings of our respective governments. We are three different radio hosts, three different countries. One common denominator. We love our countries. And so please join us Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then, of course, you can join the Red Fox Blogger. That is the F-bomb show, where I'm left to my own devices. Tim, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Kel. It's been a great show, and thank you, Michelle and Michael, for joining us tonight. And thanks to all our listeners for staying with us, and hope you can come back next week. And as Kel says, we're on again at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Freedom Loving Infidels tomorrow.
Yep, that's right.
That, for people across the pond in the UK, that's 11 o'clock in the evening European time. So get your Horlicks and your cocoa ready. Put on your carpet slippers and be ready for another fantastic show. And with that, I shall hand the microphone back to you, Kel, for you to play us out.
You've got it. And we're playing out with the Israeli national anthem, because this show is dedicated to the peoples of Israel. Have a great night, Tim. I'll talk to you later.
You too, Kel. Speak to you soon. Ain letzion zo.
Sophia, od lovna tigvatenu, a tigva bačno talpai, vihjot tamhovši beatenu, eretzion Yerushalayim. Tam chovshi be'achenu, Eretz Zion, Yerushalayim.